Okay, so if we're talking about a snap, let me clean this guy out here.
This is called the erase button.
Yes, basically.
Rip it out by the roots. Okay, I'm good now.
Okay, little feedback there. Okay, well, if you, okay, you analyze the snap. And basically, snap is mainly non-tonal. It's noise, and hopefully I do have my noise generator. Yeah.
Rick, can you turn his mic on?
It is on. It's just I probably have it covered. Or
no, it's on but not loud because he's in front of the speaker. Okay.
Yes.
Sure.
You can pair
him to the other. No. Yeah, you can.
It's fine.
Okay, so we'll start off with a noise generator, which I just saw here, and I'm going to change my eyes. Don't let age get you down. But it does. Don't worry, it's empty. Yeah, basically what you have to think about, okay, for a noise, a snap sort of noise, it's atonal. It doesn't have a pitch, per se. Or it's so short that the pitch is obscured. But it does have a tonality. You know, there's like a bright snap or a hollower snap. So you can do that with filters. You can figure that's a filter that does it. Yeah, it's fairly wideband. So and it has a very sharp transient shape. So basically the standard thing that you do, start off with a sound that a waveform that is close as you can get to that original sound. So let's start with this guy here.
Are you going to trigger it with an FSR?
See, he just loves promoting our stuff. I might, but yeah, I will. Yeah, so I'm starting off with the noise generator. And the noise generator, let's open this all up. And so we're starting off with that, which is white noise, basically. But, you know, we don't want it to be like all the time. So what I have to do is turn the noise, the volume down with the VCA. By not turning the VCA off, the sound is off. And then I need to control the VCA. So a good transient envelope generator is this pingable envelope generator here. It has
is that a brand or
it's they call it a pingable envelope generator because like in a computer program, a ping is when you send a signal in a computer program. So if I tap this button at the speed that I tap it, it'll start going at that speed. And then I have a division knob where I can actually speed it up or slow it down. But in this case, it has this particular envelope generator has a programmable shape that's closest to what I want to use as a controller. Envelope generators come in a couple of different flavors. They're called envelope generators because they generate a control voltage envelope of a particular shape. It starts at nothing. And then when you initiate the action by giving it a gate or pressing a key or pushing a button, or in this case, it automatically does it on cyclic nature, that zero voltage will jump up to a high voltage based on a control that you have called the attack control. The attack of the sound is the front end of the sound. And what differentiates different envelope generators is what follows after that. The more stages on an envelope generator, the more control you have over the envelope over time. So the typical kinds you have are called an AR or an ADSR. An AR has attack, and then it'll stay there as long as the gate is present, and then when you let go, it releases. That's what the R is. Actually, I should be doing it in the direction that it does. Attack, release. Now there's also ADSRs, which are attack, then there's a decay to the sustain level, which is held as long as the gate's happening. And then when you let go of the gate, it falls down at the release level. That's for a more complicated, say you have a guitar sound you want to do, and the pluck sound of the guitar is more harmonically rich than the actual tone that sustains after it. So you want to program the filter to open up and then kind of close a little bit and then stay there until you let it go, you know. So that you use an ADSR. This particular one is basically an AR. It just has attack and decay. So it's more suited towards what we're talking about here. So if I plug it into the control voltage input here and give us some base, let me show. Why is that not? Oh, well, I pull down. Okay, yeah. Well, maybe I will use another envelope. Let's see. Yeah, that should be poking away in a very regular manner. Oh, but I'm not. Okay, like there we go. Okay, so I have shapes where I can go from.
Working in a coal mine.
Yeah. So here we have a very short, let me slow it down a little bit. So you have these different shapes. This will morph, this particular one will morph between different shapes into like that's a nice, you know, that gets close. Now that's just with the white noise, no change in tonality at all, okay? So what I can do is I can take this same signal that I just been controlling into that and plug it into a multiple, which acts like a Y chord. I'll find my localist one. Well, here we plug it over here. And then I can take.
One of the things Division 6 makes is a buffered multiple.
Yeah, the thing with. Yes, which I'm using here. The thing with multiples are there are two different kinds. There's an active multiple and a passive multiple. An active multiple is just a couple of jacks wired together. It's the same thing as if you bought a Y chord, you know, from a stereo place.
Are you sure? Is that really? That's active?
No, that's passive. That's totally passive.
You said active.
Did I? Yeah. No, I said a regular multiple. Anyway, a regular multiple is passive in that way. So what happens is as you start tacking more destinations on, the destination's electrical inputs will load down the signal. Typically, it's not a problem unless you're doing pitched things. If you're doing stuff like running tones through an oscillator, it'll get to a point where the scaling will go off and where it won't track correctly. An active multiple, a passive multiple, has the advantage of there's no inputs or outputs. They're just jacks. You know, they can be wired anyway. An active multiple has an input and a multiple set of outputs. They're also in the pro audio world, I guess they were used to be called distribution amplifiers, where you plug in a signal into it, and it has active circuits that maintain the same levels on everything coming out, no matter how you patch them all up. You know.
So one doesn't interfere with the other.
Yeah, they're all isolated from each other, and that's the big difference. In this world there are active multiples, and the opposite of those, other than the distribution amplifier, there's a where you have multiple signals that come in, and it's a mixer, basically a unity gain mixer, where you can plug multiple things into it, and it makes sure that they don't load each other down and they mix out at the same level, input and out. So in this case, what I'll do is I'll take the output of this multiple, active multiple, and run the amp, and you can see that's where we were before. But I'll also, at the same time, run the filter cutoff frequency. So I'll turn this down, and so you can see that same envelope is now opening the filter at the same time, which gives you gets that snap at the one end. Now, if I wanted to, I could bring the resonance up, which will increase the filter's cutoff frequency. And you starts getting a tonality. Whereas if I go too far, I can hear it. That's actually what the filter is doing. You can hear it go. So then it's a case of tailoring the sound, the amount of resonance. Like that's way too much resonance. And the amount it affects the frequency. This is not going to be enough. Now, if I wanted to be real fancy about this, I would use multiple envelope generators. One envelope generator just control the volume, and another envelope generator control the filter. And that way you could tailor the sound so it doesn't track the same. you know, and I can get a snappier volume off the amplitude control than a different shape on the filter, so that the filters opens quicker and closes at a different rate, that sort of thing. So, but this at a different rate, this becomes a helicopter. You know. Yeah. Yeah. So there you have your helicopter that comes in and goes away. You know, that sort of stuff. You know, so, you know, that's basically that's where it's, if you have an image that goes along with it, the image will sell the sound. If you ever want to play a fun game, is listen to an action film with the picture turned off. You know, just listen to the sound effects, and you will hear a lot of very odd things that are when you're watching it, you will see them as something else. You know, you'll go, wait, that sounds really metal, and then you look at it, it's supposed to be glass breaking. You know, and it's because guys will. That's the thing that kills you. If you ever get in, I don't know if you watch DVD extras, but if you ever watch DVD extras, you can just be amazed at the amount of time and energy guys spend on the sound effects for like 10 seconds at most on a scene. You know, they'll do like hundreds of layers and this stuff. That's why they get paid the big bucks, I guess. But you can see this is, and we could try and find different shapes.
And so this is
a little more tech.
This is three modules.
Three modules, yeah.
We did, speaking of helicopters, we did the, remember the Coppola movie, Apocalypse Now, right? Yeah. When they came back from shooting it, the helicopters didn't really sound too good, you know, and so we had an Arp Odyssey. We did, you know, in the studio, the helicopters we did didn't sound that much like helicopters, but if you look at the print of the movie,
yeah,
and you're seeing it with the visuals, it sounds just like helicopters.
Yeah, well,
you know,
I
in the studio, it was this old Arp Odyssey, and you know, yeah, it was like this, you know, but in the movie, it really is like a helicopter.
Yeah, I one of the first gigs I did as a sound designer, I used to have these Synthia AKSs, and they were mainly a joystick driven atonal machine. And I did this work. There's this guy who had the studio up on Capitol Hill. I can't remember the guy's name, but he did a lot of ad work and a lot.
Jim Wolf.
Yeah, Jim Wolf. Yeah, Jim Wolf stuff. So I worked with him on this. This guy was doing this poetry album with whale noises, and the whale noise recording was awful, you know. And the AKS was like perfect for whale noises because you just use the joystick and you go, whoa, you know. And it was like golden. And I went in. That's what I did. You know, I just, and then you put a couple of real noises that weren't that, you know, well recorded, you put them in the background and you drench a little reverb on them and stuff.
Do you want to patch a whale noise, or would that be
too irritating? No. I just had, the AKS had a particular control voltage response that is kind of hard to duplicate, but I will try it on here. I do have a couple of joysticks here, and we'll, I have this one.
Any of the modular people making like just good old fashioned signal processing stuff like a cool reverb that you can patch through?
Yeah, this one here, I have two of them in this system. The Z5000 is like a multiverb. You know, it's got stereo, spring reverb, room reverb, hall reverb, mono and stereo delays, filters and flangers. And it's got a control voltage in that you can use to change the parameters. Yeah. It suffers from the same problems you would have with a regular digital, because it is digital. A digital effects unit, by changing parameters in real time, you know, you'll get glitching and other strange things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's cool. It's all right, you know, for part of the sound. In fact, this year, the first module ever to win the Electronic Musicians Award at the NAMM convention was a module made by Make Noise, and it was a voltage-controlled echo unit called an echophone, and it can do a lot of really cool stuff. It'll do backwards and forwards, and it'll do voltage control over the loop times and the delay times and the bit rates and the, all kinds of stuff. And it'll generate control voltages based on the audio inputs going through it. It's really, really an excellent little module. And there's also another set of technologies. There's Vactrols, which is an old technology from the olden days. Basically, it's a photo resistor and an LED in a little case. And you put a control voltage on one end and it changes the resistance on the other. Well, these Vactrols are being used by many guys to add control voltage control to modules that never had it. You know, basically you're replacing the pot on the front of the module with this Vactrol. And Dofer actually makes a universal Vactrol module, which has got four Vactrols or three Vactrols in it, and the jacks that you can plug into your favorite guitar stomp box.
I think those have cadmium in them.
Yeah, they were restricted, but they made a variant. So that you can actually use them, because they were restricted from Rojas because of the cadmium in them, everyone thought, oh man, we'll never be able to use these things again. And there were lots of things like compressor. They use Vactrols. I saw there's a great post that someone put once, and he used in his signature that Vactrols were the electronic equivalent of being drunk, because they're sloppy. You know, you hit them with a hard edge, and it takes a while for them to respond, and they have a certain memory in them that it takes a while to turn off. So it's like, you know, you plug them up, you're not going to get a fast response out of them. So, but that's a character for that limiter, for instance, that people liked. It had this mushiness to it that they really liked, which you don't understand why.
I never figured it out. I didn't think they ever sounded very good, but everybody go, well, LA2.
Yeah, you know, and it's like exploiting the limitations of the actual electronics, which is a really important thing to do in a lot of this sort of stuff. But
we have about 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. So what we'll do is we'll take...
Somebody's phone.
Yeah, it's probably mine. Yeah, it's gone. It was because it was near my pocket. Okay. So there. So I am using a joystick module because a joystick module allows you to control two parameters at one time. In this case, I'm running one control to this oscillator up here, and the other one I'm going to control to this filter there. And I'm going to take that oscillator and plug it into the filter. Oops. Saw out into the filter's audio in. And this might, let's see. Yeah. Okay, so that's basically controlled by the control voltage. But the filter. So. This has a different response than the AKS did. And then you add, let's do the mix here. Let's add some verb.
I think there's a lot of reverb underwater.
This is very crude, but you get the idea. You'd add a little more. With the AKS, it was real simple to like control both the amplitude and the filter frequency at the same time. And
sounds like Dory.
Yeah. But this is too. I'd have to juggle with it so that it wasn't such a range here. For instance, we don't need to go all the way super audio. But with a lot of reverb, you get the idea.
And this is using 1, 2, 3, 4 modules now?
Yeah, basically.
Including the reverb.
Yeah, let's take that.
So each module you add sort of gives you an exponential capability.
Well, yeah. For instance, like this oscillator, I'm using just the ramp wave, but I also have a shape control on the ramp wave that's voltage controlled, so I can go between these different shapes from a ramp going this way to a ramp going that way. Or like I was saying before, let's go to that pulse wave. Here's a difference in the pulse wave, for instance. from one end pulse to a square wave. Well, that's the filter's cutting that off, but you can. The harmonic content is quite. Oops, quite a. So that can be easily, you know, controlled by a control voltage. It's running it so far, in fact, that it's the waveform is going to all up to being just DC. There's no up and down. That's when it turns off. That's pretty wild. Let's try. Yeah. So that sort of stuff. But you get the idea. It's basic. So you analyze the sound. Yeah, sure.
How do you lay out your racks? How do you know what goes where? Did you
start that's a very personal thing. That's a very personal thing. Some people lay. I for instance have this set up sort of like these four separate racks. Okay, because I'd like to be able to. To take what I need if I ever started gigging again, I just take what I need, you know, sort of a thing. So they're kind of laid out as voices. This one here has two oscillators, two filters, VCA, an effects generator, two envelope generators, a morph controller, which is a neat little module that if you plug a waveform in the higher, it has four outputs. And they will sequentially come on and off depending on the control voltage that's put into it. So you can have it fade between four different things, you know. And this is a matrix VCA. It's it's 16 VCAs, okay? It has four inputs and four outputs, and you have a control voltage for every intersection. So you can take four sounds and mix 16 different ways from those four sounds. So you could take like the different, the square wave and the ramp wave and stuff, plug them into these jacks or the outputs from the low pass and the high pass and the band pass filter and have it morph between those sort of things. This oscillator will help in doing that. And an extra VCA. So that's just kind of like a voice. This is two oscillators, two filters, a voltage controlled mixer. It has four inputs and four control voltage inputs and one outs and the same effect, the earlier version of that effects module. It has the pingable envelope generator, an LFO. This is a four quadrature LFO, which means it's a sine wave with each sine wave is, what is it, how many degrees out of phase from each other? 90 degrees out of phase from each other. So you get four sine waves that are right behind each other. So if used with this mixer, for instance, plug all those four waves in there, you can have it do wave shaping sort of stuff where it'll fade from one channel to the next channel over time, rhythmically or whatever. And it has a quad envelope generator. And this particular envelope generator is also works as an LFO. You can have this envelope generator run by itself on its own. When it ends, it starts over again. And also it has a level on it, a threshold, which says, oh, the next one, turn the next one on at this threshold. So you can have them cascade to make a complex envelope that has multiple times that it goes up and down. So that's one voice. This is another voice, again, with two oscillators, filters. It's got a voltage-controlled echo unit called Sound of Shadows. It's got a MIDI to CV converter. So this one I can run from an external sequencer. It has a couple of mixers and LFOs and another quad envelope generator. This one is set up as an external modifier box. It has two mic preamps into it and lots of filters. It's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 filters. It's got two voltage-controlled panners in it. It's got a voltage-controlled phase shifter. It's got a ring modulator amplifier in it. So it's mainly for processing external sounds. So there's different ways people set them up as voices, just for ease a lot of times. I mean, I'm almost always oscillator and a filter and a VCA and out, you know, if you're making a tone sound.
How about your skiffs?
Skiffs are, these are controller skiffs, so they're mainly just control voltage things like the joysticks, manual push-button modules. I happen to have the this waveform player, wavetable, yeah. I happen to have this wave player here because I play it manually a lot, you know, so I have it nearby. And also, it fit. You know, there's a couple of places on the web. There's this called modulargrid.com, I think it's called, where you can pull modules from different manufacturers and lay them out in the order that you want to see your module on a planet, and it tells you how much current you're going to require. Because each of those modules require a different amount of electricity, you know, and the power. Yeah.
With your wave player, when you put in your chip there,
yeah,
does it start from top to bottom?
It's, you can do it randomly or you can do it sequentially. It can hold 72 files. And they're standard wave files. They're mono wave files. At I forget what the sampling rate. I think it's 48K. And you name them A, B, C, D all the way to Z. And then A, A, B, B, C, C all the way to Z, Z. And then 1 through 9. And then, or 1 through 99, I think, yeah. No, wait, 1 through 9, and then 1 through 99. And so right now I have it plugged up to this red push button, so if I just push the button, it'll go to the next loop. But it's not very intuitive in that you can't say, I want to go to loop 35. No. It's just mechanically, it's in the next order.
Will it always start at the first one?
It has a reset button, and if you hit the reset button, it'll jump to the first one. So that way you can kind of set it out. I tend to use it for textural backgrounds. That's the same thing with this iPhone module. There's a couple of programs I have on here, like a Thicket, which is a real nice textural waveform generator. It just makes sounds, and you can just like create different sounds by here. Let's take these two. There's a surprising large number of really good. Where are you? This one is that one. Should be working, but it's not for some reason. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, it's acting funny. This is a module I made just because I wanted to use it. Yeah, and it's, oh yeah, that's terrible. We'll turn that off.
You didn't mean to make that one.
No, I know what it is. It's because of the jacks I'm using. I bought this as a place online that you can have front panels made called Front Panel Express, and they you can send them files and they'll chew out of, it's in locally actually, and they'll send you the files. And this particular panel, Front Panel Express, I ordered too thick, and so my jacks don't all fit all the way through. So when I plug in a jack like this, it's totally flat. It doesn't make it all the way to the connection. That's what's going on there. So, but these other jacks here have a little bit of metal poking out enough that they'll work. So, but I'll have to. Here, I know what I can do. Yeah, we'll just do that. We'll take this back to its output again. And then take the input with these, and it should work then. Don't look
so
at my code.
You can tell there's lots of patch cords that go on the floor.
Yeah.
They sort of splay.
Well, the thing you end up doing is you end up wearing the necklace of patch cords. You know, that.
So you end up with the one
just right or just off. Well, this isn't going to work, I guess. But basically, if you go on to look for free music apps. There's a whole bunch of really nice apps that make mainly tonal sounds, background groany noises.
You can
and stuff.
Show it on Saturday because you'll be here Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So give them something to come for.
And also there's some loop players, some very nice loop players that will do. It's surprising what these iPhones and Android phones can actually do nowadays as far as music stuff. A lot of cases, though, getting them to sync with your other stuff in the world is a pain in the ass. But if syncing is not important to you, like in the type of music I tend to do is a more of an ambient, background-y sort of evolving over time sort of stuff, and that doesn't require syncing. I don't need to have beats that line up or anything like that, so they work really good for me.
You don't want them to line up,
maybe. No, you don't. And so depending on the type of music you do, I can put it as a general statement. If you're going to do melodic music, like prog rock or anything like that, these are not probably the instruments you want to get involved in. Oops, sorry. Yeah. That's a voice. Well, that's a, you know, $150, $200 module. That's a $150 module. This is another $175 module. This is another $119 module. So by the time you add up enough to make one mono voice, you might as well buy a minimum. You might as well buy OP1 or something like that, you know, the teenage engineering machine. And you'll get something that can do a lot more stuff.
So this is a long-term investment. It's something you're going to buy over time.
If you're interested in doing sound design and abstract sounds, or if you're interested in doing a lot of dance music, EDM stuff, sequencers and that sort of stuff, you slave all that jazz together. Boy, you can get some really neat stuff, some very complicated stuff happening. And yes, it will cost you money, but if you have a way of recording it, then again, you just do it in multi-tracks. You know, yeah.
Is anybody making this stuff as kits?
Yes, there are 4MS, the guys who make this pingable envelope generator. Almost everything they make also comes in kit form. And there's also a whole, I think, Bug Brand, and they make almost all their stuff in kits.
Are those through-hole or surface mount?
They're through-hole.
Okay. So
yeah. Oh, some of them are through-hole, and the surface mount ones, there's different levels of kits. You can get some kits where the boards are already stuffed and populated, but they don't have the through-hole parts to put in, like, you know, you put the jacks on the pots and that sort of stuff in there, the connectors. Or they are ones that were, it's basically, the parts in a bag, you know. And typically, the more complicated the module, the less chance you'll find it as a kit, because it's just a headache for the manufacturer, you know, to make sure that everyone's doing everything correctly to put it together, you know, right. But the main thing, that the DIY community is quite huge in the music, in this module. I mean, we're talking about analog circuits that are like the one guy, Paul. Schreiber said in that video, he said, I looked at Moog schematics and, you know, but what is he doing in 1960? You know, well, that's true. You know, they're very simple schematics in a lot of cases. And you can make filters fairly easily, and you can, there's a lot, the PAIA stuff that people were talking about, that stuff, when I was growing up and I first got into PAI, it was the back of Electronic Music, you know, Musician magazine. It was like, or was it Popular Electronics? It was back in Popular Electronics. And it was like, you know, crude. You know, the front panels were like tin sort of stuff. And it was, you know, it was really, really kind of.
Kits were around at that time too.
Sure, yeah.
Built your own television.
Yeah. Grief kits, we used to call them. Yeah. But
cheap kits.
Yeah. Yep. That and the Southwest Technical Products Corporation used to make some real. I made my first, I had 4 theremins that I built from Southwest Technical Product Corporation for $19 a piece, you know. And that sort of stuff, you know, you can make your own stuff. And now there's people who spend big money for PAI stuff, which I don't get. You know? But,
so we should call it.
Oh, okay.
Soon for the sake of.
Yeah, and the last thing is that there's a lot of stuff being done on what they call circuit bending, which is taking, you know, like speak and spells and other noise-making toys that you buy at the Goodwill and just walking around in the circuit with the wire until it goes, oh, that's cool, and then you solder that on and put a switch.
I've seen
Huh?
I've seen the book Circuit Bending.
Yeah, and there's a huge crowd of circuit benders, and yeah. You can find guys with like Elise's drum machine with like 30 switches on the top, and it does changes the pitch of the oscillators inside, and you know that sort of stuff, and makes it sound make sounds that you never thought of. But you know, and if it blows up, well, okay, that was something I bought at Goodwill for $20. You know, so what? Everything's. Thank you.
So we'll see you all Saturday, hopefully.
We're on air. Hands up.